Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn. I'm at home. Maddie Lee's here.
I am.
And we are podcasting about Thunder exit interviews. The Thunder season is a wrap. Barry and I kind of wrapped up the playoffs a few days ago, but Maddie and I are here to wrap up the rather interesting exit interviews from today. And
it was a good day.
It was interesting. It was certainly interesting. And before we get into it, the podcast is brought to you by Charleston's of Bricktown. Make sure you get to Charleston's of Bricktown for the rest of the NBA playoffs because the Thunder's not playing anymore. But Maddie, you know, we had some interesting stuff come out of exit interviews today. We had some pretty standard fare stuff, but we also had what I thought were a few interesting little nuggets of information outside of the, you know, I thought pretty standard Russell Westbrook stuff.
I haven't seen him in an exit interview setting before, so I thought it was really good.
He's a lot more open than he would be on a day-to-day because I think he takes time, he cools off, he gets removed from the intensity of the games, and he's a lot more reflective. You know, we've seen him do that at least once this season, but he kind of went into, you know, some of the feeling he feels about the criticism he gets. How he apparently doesn't pay attention to it, which is not true. but he was for Westbrook, he was long-winded on it. And you can
honestly, some of these answers are pretty long-winded for anyone. I can read this one. My favorite.
You're going to read that large block of mess. What's the question there?
The question is, other than jump shooting, because we'll go back. The question before was about if there needs to be any more emphasis on him as a three-point shooter. And he said, there can be emphasis. You guys can talk about it, but I'm just going to continue to do what I'm doing and obviously find a way to pick and shoot better ones, but that's up to me. That's it. That was the not as interesting part. And then someone followed up with, other than jump shooting, what are the specific areas about your game that you want to improve coming back next year?
Which he kind of went back to the whole people hating on me thing.
Yeah. So he said he wants to improve everything. And he says, I always tell you that because I know I can do everything at a high level, so I always make sure that I'm able to do that. And that's one thing about me, is that, and I think a lot of times, whether it's you guys or whoever it is, people across the world, when you do so much, you've got so much ish you're doing throughout a game, whether it's defending, rebounding, passing. There used to be conversations that I was a ball hog, but now I lead the league in assists for the past 3 years or whatever it is. That's getting squashed out. So now the conversation is about shooting. Next year, I'm going to become a better shooter. And after that, it'll probably be F. My left foot is bigger than the right one. Who knows?
Okay. And we won't take too long on the Westbrook stuff. We'll get more into the other guys. But he's right. And on the same thing, there's just something about that I think every great player goes through. I think every great player gets his game kind of poked at and prodded at. Like, okay, he's great at
and
this.
He recognized that.
Yeah.
That this, like, because then the follow-up question, he keeps going on. Then the follow-up question was like, do you think that's weird that you get criticized so much? And he was like, no.
Yeah. Because the great players all get their games dissected. I mean, we don't get on the podcast and talk about Patrick Patterson every game. We're talking about Russell Westbrook.
About his form on the bench.
Yeah, we're not.
And his clapping right there. Yeah. He was really off rhythm.
We're not talking about Deonte Burton's pregame dunks. Like, we're talking about Russell Westbrook having his imprint on every game. But he is right. You know, his game gets dissected more than I think anybody in the league because he's just such a player that you can't take your eyes off of him. And for better or worse,
and his highs are so high.
Yeah, his highs are highs and his lows are really low. But yeah, we're going to look at the shooting because it was not great this year.
Yep.
and it cost him some games. But look, Russell Westbrook was great today. The question about Westbrook is it going to change from year to year? And a lot of stuff's got to change around him too. They've got to get more shooting. They've got to get, to me, they have to be smarter on offense, and that's Billy Donovan coming up with better schemes to attack defenses. That's the players on offense, you know, being better. Jeremy Grant, Terrence Ferguson have to take another leap. They've got to become guys that can be more consistent, whether it's Grant and his dribbling, his attacking the rim, Terrence Ferguson being able to attack off the bounce, be more consistent with his three-point shot, and Steven Adams, he has to expand his offensive game. And, you know, the Thunder has to figure out what they're going to do with this roster, because they don't have a lot of flexibility when it comes to cap. They don't have any flexibility when it comes to cap space. So somebody's going to have to go, and they're going to have to be some new guys around. So it's not all on Westbrook. I think he's made strides this year. I know I'm difficult on him on the podcast, but much is expected of great players. And he's a guy who really did make strides in terms of his passing, I thought, and his facilitation, considering that's what the Thunder wanted from him more. And you know, he's right. He's right about a lot of that stuff. And I thought he was pretty introspective today in terms of, you know, kind of how he's perceived. Not that he didn't have this coming with all the stuff he was doing in the series against Lillard.
Yeah, no, he really was. He was really good. And he fully answered not – I don't want to talk about this any more than to just say he fully answered one of Barry's questions. Moving on.
Yeah, he answered everybody's stuff today. He was solid. I mean, he was short on some of it, but he wasn't like, you could tell the difference between him being dismissively short and I just want to answer the question with a few words, because I asked him about and I don't think the answer was particularly good from a perspective standpoint, but it was an answer. I asked him about if teams are giving him a shot, but he's not making a particular shot, and I meant his mid-range. I should have been very specific about that. What is he supposed to do in that situation? And he says, shoot it. And I'm like, I don't know about all that, brother. You might want to move the ball a little bit. I'm going to take this call. Fill the space, man.
All right. Well, another answer that he gave that I thought he could have just brushed off was, he was asked if, I think by Brett Dawson, but I'm not 100% sure on that. He was asked if losing, being knocked out in the first round for the past 3 years drives him or bothers him. And he said, bother, yes. Drive, I guess, but I don't really need it to drive me to be who I want to be or be where I want to be. So I thought, I mean, you know, that's a question that he, you know, could have stopped it at the first two, and he continued on to talk more about where he gets his motivation from and such stuff. So that was really interesting. And this being my first exit interviews with the Thunder, I was, you know, pretty blown away by how long he talked and how reflective he was. And it was an all around really good media session. And Eric mentioned the consistency part. Jeremy Grant said almost exactly, you know, I asked him what they're missing, what they need to get over that hump of the first round exit. And he, without skipping a beat, was like, consistency. We need to be more consistent. And I think that's right on the money. We've seen how good this team can be. We saw how good they were when Paul George was absolutely shooting extremely efficiently, and when the Thunder could really defer to him on offense. And we have pizza. And the Thunder were consistent with that for a few, like, three consecutive months, and everyone was shooting well. And then,
are you rambling?
No, this is all gold. You guys don't know that Eric has not been in the room the entire time I've been talking. I've just been pretending. I'm talking about consistency, and now Jeremy Grant said that was what they're missing to get over the hump, and how that's spot on.
No, that's part of it. You know, I think that consistency was a big problem for the Thunder post All-Star break, and I think it was interesting, you know, how some of those guys addressed that. They, you know, I wrote about it for today, or Rutherford Friday's Oklahoman about, you know, the consistency. Well, not the consistency, but how a lot of these guys didn't really pinpoint certain things that they need to be better at. But some of them did. And, you know, we'll get into that with some of the, the conversations that they had. And that would be a nice segue into, you know, some of the interesting things we heard from exit interviews. Let's just start from the top. You know, Billy Donovan and his future. Didn't give a lot, and you didn't really expect him to. He's got a year left on his deal because he, you know, the Thunder picked up his fifth-year option. Bobby. Okay, people are going to think I'm a dog abuser. I did not abuse my dog just now. I just grabbed her off of Maddie. She's perfectly fine.
She's really into the putting her slobbery mouth in your lap. She's very cute, though. Hi, Bobby. Stuart's here, too. Do you guys have things to say? You were not in exit interviews. Yeah, Billy was straight up asked if he expects to be here next year. He said, going around along with business as usual. I talked to Sam on the plane some. We talked about some things. We'll talk more later, essentially. I'm paraphrasing.
Not a strong answer from Billy Donovan, but sometimes he frankly just doesn't give very strong answers on stuff. So, you know, in terms of some other guys who were interesting to me, I thought, and you actually asked Dennis Schroeder this question, and he just wound up going into that quite interesting answer in the differences between Mike Budenholzer and Billy Donovan, which I think said a lot about Billy Donovan's coaching style. Coming into this job, it was pretty well known that Billy Donovan liked to give his guards kind of freedom, you know, to kind of, as Russell Westbrook would say, read the game. And,
so, and as Billy Donovan would say, create and generate.
Create and generate and read the game. Look, some people would call that, you know, giving your guards autonomy. Some people would call that not giving your guards a plan. And what the Thunder probably needs more than anything coming off of the Scott Brooks era is a little bit more direction in that regard. A little bit more, you know, uniformity on offense because – you know, lazing into post-ups and Westbrook kind of going on solo missions and Paul George going on solo missions just isn't really something that's going to break down defenses consistently. You know, besides the fact that they probably just need more spacing on the floor to be able to open up driving lanes for guys. And Westbrook needs to find his mid-range game again because he just doesn't have anything outside of the paint right now. All those things limit you, but what also limits you is an offense that's kind of, you know, hey, just – be abstract. Do what you want all the time. You got to be able to like run sets and execute in the half court. I wrote that, you know, going into the playoffs, and I thought you saw a little bit of promise of that in those last five games, but that didn't really materialize much in the postseason. You saw it here and there, and I thought that they were able to pick on Kanter a little bit in his Kanter, but not consistently enough to where you're going to beat teams in the playoffs. All the teams in the playoffs are there for a reason. And Billy Donovan's got to come back with some better offensive continuity next year, or they just got to get somebody else who can have more offensive continuity.
It's an interesting balance, too, because, you know, you have to go between creating enough structure to break down the really good defenses in this league, but also you have got a guy in Russell Westbrook who always is talking about how he likes to read the game. You have a guy in Paul George who is always talking about how he doesn't like plays run firm because he likes to basically feel it out. So striking that with enough structure and not too much is I don't envy the person who has to find that.
So anyway, Schroeder,
this is why I'm not a coach.
Schroeder kind of contrasted the Mike Budenholzer Billy Donovan styles, and Schroeder said it was more of a, and Mike Budenholzer is going to be the guy who's coach of the year. He coached the Bucks this year. He came there and, you know, changed the game around Giannis Antetokounmpo and, you know, brought in Brook Lopez, who's able to stretch the floor from the five, and that allowed Giannis to play basically power forward center and be the one guy in and the four guys out, creating the floor space for him, or to just, you know, just take the ball from the top of the three-point line, take two dribbles and dunk on people because he has so much space to operate and get a running start. You know, the concept is interesting for a guy like Westbrook.
And who Schroeder, I don't know if we mentioned this, who Schroeder played for in Atlanta.
Yes.
And that's where the connection was. He wasn't just bringing up a random coach.
Yeah, Schroeder played for Mike Budenholzer his first 4 years in the league in Atlanta, or 4 or 5 years. I can't remember. I think it was his first 4 years. But he was making the contrast, saying that, you know, Mike Budenholzer was more, had a stronger opinion. And, you know, some of it can be kind of, some of it can be kind of tough in translation because Schroeder, you know, doesn't have the strongest grasp of the English language. He speaks perfectly fine English. You can understand him. But he basically was saying that Mike Budenholzer was more demonstrative about his coaching style, while Billy kind of lets the players do what they want to do, or at least the guards.
Do you want the exact quote?
You might as well just read the whole
quote. Okay. He said, so my question was, because he had mentioned before that Billy listens to his players, and I think Paul had said something super similar. We'd heard it a couple of times, and so I asked about that, and how rare that was, and how it changes things for a team. And he said, I mean, it can go either way, to be honest. I've never seen that before. I've been with Coach Budenholzer in Atlanta, and he's got a strong opinion about what he wants to do, and I got used to it because I wasn't in the NBA before. So my first year started with him, and he's got a strong belief, the San Antonio kind of system. He's a good coach, you know, and I like that he keeps everyone accountable, and he's got his own way. Billy's a kind of way I never had it before, and it can go either way, I think. If it goes too much and he listens too much to the players, then it can go bad as well. But like I said, me and him had good conversations, and I never tried to change anything. We never had any issues. I mean, he's been great with me, and that's all I can say.
Okay, here's one question I have about that. Okay, if he listens too much to the players, who do you think Billy Donovan is listening to? Just zero in on it. Just like yeah. I don't want to pile all. But like, do you think Billy Donovan is out there listening to Terrence Ferguson? Do you think Terrence Ferguson is saying, "Hey, Billy, we should do this"?
It's Abdul Nader.
It's Abdul Nader.
Abdul Nader is running this team.
Do you think it's Hamidou Diallo? Okay. Anyway, but that was really interesting from Schroeder, and one of the few times you've seen, and I'm sure the Thunder brass loved that one. Somebody kind of go off the cuff about Billy. Like, these guys always talk nicely about Billy. Like, Russell Westbrook said they had good communication, and they, you know, he's respectful, and Donovan said vice versa, and those guys have good communication and such. But it's really the first time you've heard a guy besides Markieff Morris, who we'll get to in a minute, kind of
he was more straight up,
kind of just be kind of blunt about the way that Billy goes about his business.
It was nice. It was refreshing and honest. And he was still, you know,
he was still complimentary. He was just saying it was different.
Yeah.
And he was saying that, look, sometimes, like, it's nice when these guys acknowledge that this stuff isn't always hunky-dory. Because you can obviously see it's not sometimes. Like, Dennis Schroeder gets frustrated with Billy Donovan. Like, sometimes he'll get mad when, you know, Billy Donovan takes him out of a game. And he's not, like, over there, like, throwing a hissy fit. But it's kind of like, dang, man, I want to stay in. But, like, all players kind of, like, go through that at some point in their career or sometime during the season. The Thunder gets mad at Billy Donovan when he calls timeouts sometimes. Like, Russell Westbrook will be halfway to the rim and Billy Donovan will call a timeout. Now, Russell Westbrook might miss the shot when he gets in the rim, but Billy Donovan might have saved him. But sometimes these dudes get mad. They wanted Billy to call a timeout one game before they hit a game winner. I think it might have been the Brooklyn game. Yeah, because Westbrook, D'Angelo Russell missed a shot, and Westbrook was getting ready to tear down the floor, and Billy called a timeout, and they were like, "No, what are you doing?"
And then he drew up a perfect play.
Yeah, and then Westbrook got two defenders to come to him. He throws it back to George, and George is three. So, like, coaches and players go through this stuff throughout the season, and I think Schroeder's kind of honesty about the playing styles was interesting. And you got to keep this in mind, too. Schroeder and Mike Budenholzer didn't have the best relationship.
Yeah. So, Schroeder is very open about his belief that this is a better place for him than – granted, there was a regime change.
But Mike Budenholzer has been pretty open about the challenges he had in coaching Dennis Schroeder. And look, some of that's he's a young player. He was trying to make his mark in the league, and, you know, Schroeder had to grow up kind of on the job. But, you know, I've asked Mike Budenholzer about it. He said he didn't say it in this many words, but he kind of hesitated when talking about the challenges. Yeah.
He said it was Billy's problem now.
Yeah,
something along those lines.
He said something like that.
But he might not have said problem, but essentially, like, that's for Billy to.
So I don't necessarily think that Westbrook or Schroeder are the easiest guys to coach. That doesn't mean they're not good players. It just means that there are challenges that come with coaching each of those guys.
Billy said an interesting thing too about Westbrook, where he was asked specifically about their relationship, and he kind of was like, I'm from the East Coast. I kind of like that he's just super upfront.
Yeah.
Voices his concerns.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
That there was a lot of people putting stuff out there without really putting it out there. And I think that's what you get from exit interviews. That's really interesting. It's guys trying not to directly say what the issue is, but kind of give you some little breadcrumbs about, this isn't all hunky-dory kind of situation. There was some stuff going on, but
Charleston's in Bricktown is your pregame destination to cheer on OKC's favorite sports team. Stop by before the Thunder game for a drink and a bite, or watch the whole game at our state-of-the-art bar with big screen TVs all around. Charleston's in Bricktown offers free parking with validation in any lower Bricktown parking lot. Visit charlestons.com for more information.
And we're back. Maddie's talking trash about my dog's eyes.
I was singing about her. I wrote a song for her called... Never mind. She's adorable.
You're talking trash about my dog's eyes. Anyway.
She's the best. She's a little old.
But yes, back to exit interviews. We were about to talk about the great Markieff Morris.
Yeah. So he actually, what I led with was him saying, I'm probably not coming back if I play the same number of minutes, which is also what he started with. But he actually technically he started with like, yeah, I like it here. Said he would like more minutes, and then said, oh, that this other than that, this has been one of the best years experiences of his career.
And it was interesting because Markieff Morris's brother Marcus basically just popped off unprompted yesterday, I think it was in a scrum setting with Celtics reporters, because Markieff Morris, who plays with the Celtics, he was asked about Damian Lillard's shot against the Thunder. And he basically said, you know, the Thunder didn't defend it the right way. They should have sent the trap, blah, blah, blah. But he basically went into this whole thing about how the Thunder did Markieff Morris wrong. Saying they should have played him more, that Markieff came there with the thought that he was going to get more minutes, that it was disrespectful what the Thunder did in the playoffs by only playing him, you know, four minutes in the last game. I think Markieff Morris is wrong.
he also acknowledged that
this is
at least in the from the Athletic article, acknowledged that this is his brother. He's obviously biased.
Yeah, it's his brother. Markieff did not watch his brother play defense all year. Markieff did play some quality minutes for the Thunder in the playoffs, but they weren't going to play him more than Jeremy Grant, nor should they have. The one game that he played under, I think, 12 or 13 minutes, which is what he averaged until game five, the Thunder shot the best they have all series.
So you're going to stick with the guys.
Everybody but Westbrook shot well. I don't think Markieff Morris was the difference between Damian Lillard going off for 50 points and not. Just a hunch. if Markieff Morris has some incredible talent in the trap that I don't know about, in trapping guys, not the trap, but trapping people, I'd love to see it. So, yeah, I think Markieff is extremely biased towards his brother and impartial towards his brother, and he cares about him because his brother's going to be a free agent, and this was an opportunity for him to make a lot of money or to at least get a contract of some ilk.
Right. Especially after he came back from injury. He was with the Wizards, wasn't looking good. So when he got the buyout, it was like his that decision – he was making with keeping in mind that he was going to be a free agent this summer and looking towards what would be the best situation for him to showcase his talents and get a good contract.
Yeah. And I don't like, and there's a swath of people out there who are looking for another reason to fire Billy Donovan. And one of them is that he didn't use his players the right way. We said going into this series, it was going to be about the starters. The Thunder's bench played well in the series.
They did.
They actually extended leads when they played. Now, are you going to play Markieff Morris 30 minutes as opposed to Jeremy Grant? No. No, you're not. Even if Grant had a poor game, you're still not going to play Markieff Morris over him more minutes. The bench did their job. Markieff Morris did his job. Now, if the Thunder promised him 30 minutes when he got here, then that was a ridiculous promise to begin with. But I don't think they did that anyway. So, to me, Markieff Morris got every opportunity to show what he was about. As soon as he got to Oklahoma City, Patrick Patterson's minutes were gone.
Yeah.
Even when Morris wasn't playing well, he got all of Patrick Patterson's minutes and some. And to the point to where we were asking questions about if Patrick Patterson would come back into the rotation at the end of the year, because Morris wasn't playing that great. He was just basically doing what Patterson did with a little bit better three-point percentage. Little bit. Rebounding picked up toward the end of the year.
And he was getting to the – oh, I don't know the numbers on this, but it seemed like he was getting to the rim more than Patterson does, because Patterson is basically just out there to stretch the floor.
Yeah.
Offensively.
And then Marcus Morris threw in – all of the stuff that we talked about the Thunder being bad at, and basically threw that in as a as like extra kind of gut punches to the fact that his brother didn't get to play. Look, I have no inside knowledge of whether or not Markieff Morris had a conversation with his brother about his frustrations, but for him to deviate as far as he did from the initial question about Damian Lillard's shot, it would lead me to believe that these guys who talk to each other all the time and who are twins, there was probably some discussion about his frustrations.
He said he's been watching the Thunder, that he wouldn't watch the Thunder otherwise, but he's been watching the Thunder a lot to see, to watch his brother. Also, someone definitely tweeted out a picture of him, like, watching the Thunder on his phone, which was sweet. But yeah, no, I agree. I don't think that Markieff showed enough in the, you know, granted, tough situation being coming back from injury, trying to integrate onto a new team. I don't think he showed enough defensively to earn more playing time. But I also get it from his perspective. Like, absolutely, you are a free agent. You should be able to say, like, I want to go somewhere where I'll see the floor more.
Yeah, and I think the Thunder even expanded their use of Markieff Morris and going with small ball lineups without Steven Adams, where they had Jeremy Grant and Markieff Morris in the same lineup. Mm-hmm. So, I think that the Thunder gave him ample opportunity to showcase himself in the regular season, and it wasn't as much as it probably was when it got to the postseason, it probably wasn't as much as he would have wanted. But look, the rotation shortened in the postseason. Like, that's just how it goes, man.
Yeah, I looked it up. He was averaging about 16 minutes per game in the regular season, and then that shortened to about 11 in the postseason.
Yeah, I didn't think much of that Morris stuff. That was weird. But I thought Markieff Morris was a good addition. It wasn't ever going to be something that was going to take the Thunder over the top. Like, they had to be better. You know, Schroeder was the guy who had to be better, and he just wasn't good enough.
He stepped it up towards the end of the season.
No, he did all right.
And he had some good playoff games.
And some.
Not all of them.
Basically, all the Thunder players played well together in like two games.
Yeah, they're like, we're all going to be good now. Okay, now we're all going to stop shooting.
Yeah.
Well.
No. Schroeder actually did get better as the series went on. That game one was horrendous, but he got better as the series went on. Maddie, what were your thoughts on Andre Robertson? That was the first time you ever got to talk to him.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. The only interaction I've ever had with Andre before today was introducing myself towards the beginning of the season. And he just hasn't been available because he's been dealing with his horrible knee injuries. He was fantastic. He gave a very detailed answer to Eric, your question about what you know, how to guard Damian Lillard without stepping on anyone's toes. He was funny. He like lightened the mood at times by like he said ish, but with the S at the beginning, and that's not how you spell that. And he apologized for
we censor ourselves way too much on this podcast.
He apologized for swearing and yeah, really, really nice. Oh my gosh, the part that I was most impressed, I guess he's living this every day, so he's gotten really well versed in what's going on with his body, or maybe he knows more about medicine than I knew, but like, man, he was throwing out technical medical terms that I, as the daughter of two doctors, have never heard of before.
I mean, he hasn't played basketball in a long time. He's had a lot of time to learn about his body. One of the interesting things that he said, I thought, was that he did learn about, he learned a lot about his body and how to, you know, gauge when he is, you know, in a situation where he does need to tell somebody what's going on. And I asked him about that, and he was like, asked him about guys playing through injury and you know, knowing when something's wrong and being able to tell somebody. I think we take for granted how much these guys play through things, and either they don't tell somebody or they do. They're given an option, and then they wait until the end of the season in order to get it fixed. I think Russell Westbrook's a guy we're going to see who hasn't mentioned anything, but he alluded to it today when somebody said if he was dealing with any injuries, and he said, I'll be okay. Westbrook's
he has had his hand taped up for like a month.
Westbrook's going to be a guy where maybe in the offseason we see some kind of procedure, or we see a press release about that. Robertson said he was a guy who, you know, he's dealt with knee tendonitis throughout his career, and he probably played in situations where, and granted, he sat out games prior to his actual injury in January 27th, 2018. He sat out games that year due to knee tendonitis, but he's probably a guy who's played through some things over the past couple of years dealing with knee tendonitis, which has been going on for a while, and you know, said he can deal with it. But, you know, that stuff leads to serious injuries, and I think that you saw a mature Andre Robertson talking about those things, talking about, you know, how he needs to pay more attention to his body and how it responds. And then you get to Paul George.
Wait, quick thing about Andre first.
Quick thing about Andre.
Another interesting medical part is I think we basically understood the avulsion fracture and the patellar tendon rupture as two separate events. Andre explained how they're connected, where he was saying basically by rupturing his patellar tendon, the patella wasn't getting, I'm going to pull up and make sure that I'm not giving wrong. Basically, the bone wasn't getting the same amount of blood flow as usual, and so that weakened it, which then meant that it was easier for him to get that fracture.
He definitely sounded well-versed in what was going on.
He said it way better than I just did.
There was a lot going on there, and he said he'd been on a bone and tendon diet where he was eating specific things, you know, to help strengthen those bones, calcium pills, all kinds of stuff like that. Says he does not drink milk, which I am even more a fan of Andre Robertson now because I am not a straight milk drinker. I don't play that mess.
Yeah, I'm lactose intolerant.
What is Stewart doing?
He's very upset for Andre.
Stewart.
Hey, buddy. Did you want to say something?
Come on, man. It made you realize how much you miss having Andre Robertson around this team because he's a good voice. He's pretty open about, you know, his shortcomings. Everybody knows he's not a great offensive player, but he's very knowledgeable. He's a smart basketball player, and I think the Thunder missed him in that regard. Is that he knows his limitations. He doesn't do anything outside of his limitations, and he's just a hell of a defender too. Just in seconds, the way he described defending Lillard, where things are like, whoa, Andre Robertson's been paying attention.
Yeah.
He's a guy you hope can get back just so you can have him around and on the court as much. And he was around the team, but it's different when you're not out there playing and you're not you're not always in the mix all the time, but he was there.
Yeah, it's on the road. So
he said he wants to be back for training camp. He said that last year. We'll see.
He said he was on track to be.
He was
back
on track.
But then also said that he doesn't want to rush things to try to be a part of any exhibition games or anything like that before then.
Yeah, we'll see with that.
Sorry, I messed up your nice transition to Paul
that was
earlier.
That was fine. Paul George is going to have some surgery. Well, I think we've all come to that conclusion. We probably came to that conclusion a few weeks ago.
He hinted at it today.
It's happening.
He said, the most damning part was that he said he's not sure about the timeline of getting, addressing his problem, and that he might not be ready for preseason. He talked about needing to clean up what needs to be cleaned up now, as opposed to waiting so it doesn't become a reoccurring issue. He said he's been dealing with a long time, and I was like, okay, well, how are we going to define long time? Is that before, you had to sit out about 2 months ago for three games? That was towards the end of February, beginning of March. And he was like, yeah, it was before that. I was like, okay, when? I was like, he declined to talk about that. Was asked specifically if it was a labrum, declined to talk about the specifics of what type of injury it was. So he was, we'll find out more specifics later, but
it's a problem. The extent of the problem, we'll find out. But the funny thing is, Paul George played really well the last three games of the series. So,
that last game, he shot 70% from the field.
He looked great the last few games of the series. It looked like he had said that it wasn't causing him any pain.
That was a rhythm issue.
Yeah, range of motion. Now that's a different story. He might have some range of motion issues.
Yeah, Billy said something about like in game one the issue was him raising his arm.
Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes we think these guys are lying to us when it comes to pain and stuff like that. It didn't seem like Paul George was in any pain these last few games. First game struggled. What did he do in game two? I don't even remember what game two was, but
I don't remember either. They're running together.
They all run together. But I think the last three games, I think even game three, he was poor from the field, but he got to the line a ton.
He got to the line. So yeah, he had like 14 points from the free throw line or something like that.
But the last two games, he shot really well. And, it's better that he takes care of whatever he has to get taken care of now. And if he doesn't play basketball in the offseason, so be it. But he just needs to get it taken care of. We kind of talked about this. Like, is it going to be something that's going to bother him for an extended period of time? And is the Thunder delaying that period of time he could be healing if they let him play? So much of that is up to the athletes sometimes. Sometimes they put it in those guys' hands and say, you can play through this, but it's up to you to whether or not you want to get this done. And
that's really hard to say, no, I'm good. Like, I'm not going to play. I'll just go get this surgery. Like, I cannot imagine Paul doing that given a choice. Because he said that he was told, but you playing is not going to make it worse.
And that's typically the green light for these guys to go play. Paul George talked about that. And did Paul George say anything else of note?
I liked what he said about digesting this first round exit and how it was tough because, like, not only, he obviously expected to go deeper into the playoffs when he was like, yep, I'm going to stay in OKC. But then he was talking about how he felt like they had, in that game five, he said, obviously, Dame had an amazing game, but as a team, he felt like they'd finally gotten back to their identity, and then they lose and they're done.
Yeah, that was a tough one. He was saying, I felt like we finally got back to our identity, and I was like, yeah, until Damian Lillard hit that 3-point shot in your eyeball.
Yeah.
That stuff hurts. Kind of the tip.
Oh, he also said interesting things about Terrence and the the transition from year two to year three.
That's probably going to be one of the more interesting stories over the summer. I mean, unless Billy Donovan gets fired in the next week or so. And then we start the coaching search situation. But Ferguson's going to be Ferguson is going to be really interesting because he's the guy who has to kind of take that next jump. And when you see a guy that young play so much, I think you tend to put heightened expectations when he makes those large leaps from year one to year two. You tend to think, oh, he's got to make another big leap. Like, Ferguson doesn't have to make a huge leap. He's just got to become a little bit better in the things that he did this year.
He's got to put on weight, which he talked about. Yeah. He's got to, you know, so that he's not just getting bumped off screens. He's got to, I mean, we've seen him be a fantastic three-point shooter. He just has to make that more consistent. And then Ray was talking basically about just making him a more versatile scorer. And they're going to work out this summer, it sounds like, together.
Yeah, I think that these Thunder guys kind of see Ferguson as a project, and that's in a good way. They see him as a young guy that they can really, you know, put a lot of trust in and turn into a really good player. And I think the Thunder sees that too. He's got a great blueprint and with his size and his willingness to learn. And now he's got experience because, you know, Billy Donovan threw him in the fire and said, "All right, man, look, I'm going to stick with you. I trust you. We're going to start you." And
he took a lot of flack for that.
Yeah, yeah. Look, Billy Donovan's done a lot of he's done a lot of questionable things this year, and in the last series, whether it's how he attacked Kanter, you know, what the offensive makeup was in the half court, if there was any offensive makeup. But I don't think you can question his decision with Ferguson. I think that turned out really well,
so well,
and so well to the point that. And, you know, I asked Andre Robertson about coming back and being a guy who's not starting, and he kind of hesitates. Like, it was a really, like, I don't know if he was gathering himself to try and figure out how to answer that question, or he was almost like taken aback by the thought of it. Like, he hadn't even thought about, like, oh, well, he's like, well, I'll do. And then he finally got around to being like, well, I'll do whatever I need to do for the team, you know. But I don't think Robertson should start when he comes back. And I don't think it's a guarantee that he would anyway, because Ferguson played well enough defensively to where he didn't take a ton off the table, aside from the fouling. He's got to get better at the fouling.
Yeah.
I think the fouling stuff comes with experience. Steven Adams will tell you that. When he was young, he was fouling all the time. He couldn't stay on the floor. You know, Andre Robertson, if you go look at his first 2 years, he was probably fouling a ton as well. When you're in the league more, you're used to how guys work. You know how offensive players operate. Like Andre Robertson, like a computer.
You know when to get your hands
out
of there.
And I think you saw that from Ferguson. I think Ferguson, from week to week, you saw him learn how to defend certain guys certain ways. He learned with Harden. He learned with CJ McCollum.
He'll also get more, I don't know if respect is the right word, but kind of respect from the officials, essentially, where they're don't see him just as a young dude running around, you know, trying to figure things out. Like,
yeah, I think that's part of it too.
He'll build up more of a reputation, I guess, is the way to phrase it.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too, because look, Paul George gets away with a lot of stuff. He's physical with guys and he gets away with it. So I think these guys on the Thunder really look at Terrence Ferguson and see the potential he has. And, you know, it's going to be big for him this summer. He didn't make it clear whether he was going to summer league or not. It would be great if he did, but it's a big summer for Terrence Ferguson in terms of that next step that he needs to take. Because again, you don't know what you're going to get from Andre Robertson. He says he wants to be ready for camp. That's not a guarantee. You know, they don't have an Alex Abrines. They'll probably try and bring in somebody else, whether it's through a minimum or a mid level, but. That kind of player isn't going to have the upside that Terrence Ferguson has or won't be the type of player that Terrence Ferguson can be. Maybe a mid-level player would be, but that's going to come with a lot of tax implications, mm-hmm. too, that the Thunder may not want to pay, you know, just depending on who comes in, who goes out. So it's going to be really important for Ferguson to come back with his game upgraded a little bit.
And the interesting thing that Paul said was, because he was talking about how big of a year three was for him and his career, and he was saying basically that Ferguson has to go in and what was the phrasing that he used? Basically,
he said he essentially said that he has to demand Billy give him more responsibility in the offense, or something along those lines.
But the way that he's here, I'll
just look it up. Just look it up. Just look it up.
But what I took from it was that he's got to be good enough, essentially, like not go up to Billy and be like, give me more responsibility in the offense, but like turn into the type of player where he's going to have to.
No, it's taking more ownership in the offense. I think that was Paul George's main point. And Paul George talked about it from the standpoint that from year two to year three, that's what he did. And he had some special circumstances because he was coming into a year where he was looked – he was this guy who was a lottery pick, and he was looked at as that next guy after Danny Granger. But Terrence Ferguson, like, the Thunder's had shooting guard issues for quite some time now.
Oh, he said he needs to put pressure on coach to use him more, to use him in the offense. I think that's what you want of young guys, is for them to put pressure on the coach to increase his, whether it's defense, offense, increase his production out there. So he's got to have a big summer. He's got to work on a lot of stuff, work on just ball handling, pick and roll, shooting, defense, because this is a pivotal year for young guys.
Pivotal.
Their third year. He's got to make a jump for us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a big one for Ferguson. What did you glean from Jerami Grant, Steven Adams? I thought that I was actually kind of doing some stuff in between there, so I don't really have a great idea of what those guys came away with saying. I thought, you know, Adams was typically funny.
Yeah, he was his usual
self.
Jerami, I think the most interesting thing that he said was that, you know, looking back at the trade, when Philly traded him to Oklahoma City, like in retrospect, he thinks it's one of the best things that could have happened for his career. And he talked about how much he's developed since coming here.
That's another Billy Donovan checkmark, because that's a guy who was not a starter when the season began. And Billy Donovan pulled the hook quickly on Patrick Patterson.
He said, okay. For quote-unquote matchup reasons.
For quote-unquote matchup reasons, which turned into Jerami Grant's a better player.
I mean, that is a matchup reason.
You're not wrong. You are not wrong. No, but it's weird that I can't really think of anything that Adams said that particularly stood out. He did have one thing that was pretty funny that I asked him about, Enes Kanter being introduced in Turkish in Portland, and when you go to the Moda Center for starting lineup introductions, that the PA announcer actually says Enes Kanter's introduction in Turkish, and Steven Adams said, yeah, that's cool, you know, it was a cool little twist on it. But then he also went into how the NBA or the Thunder does like a Hispanic Heritage Night. And he was talking about, like, yeah, I like it when the PA announcer speaks in Spanish, and he does that whole thing. And he's like, it's like Josh Huestis, but instead it's Josh Huestis.
He was like, Josh Huestis is always the best one.
Josh Huestis is Josh Huestis or Huestis. And I was like, but it was funny, but I also thought to myself, like, when has Josh Huestis been introduced in the starting lineup? Maybe I missed one. Maybe I forgot about that last year, that Josh Huestis started some games. He probably did. My dog's freaking out. She's freaking out. I think she has to go outside. I'm not sure.
Hi, Stuart.
Maddie, you want to wrap this bad boy up?
Sounds good.
Okay. Any final thoughts?
It's a good season, guys. Thanks for coming along the ride with my first NBA season.
Yeah, we'll be back when Billy Donovan gets fired. So,
Are we talking after Presti?
We'll talk after Presti, whether Billy Donovan gets fired or not. Which, if something does happen, it'll probably be within the next week or two, unless the Thunder is waiting. No. It'll probably be within the next week or two, because they'll want to get that show on the road, and then they'll start thinking about candidates. Some of those candidates might still be in the playoffs right now. There are a lot of guys with Thunder connections out there, namely Monty Williams, David Vanderpool, Nate Tibbetts. Those are both assistants that are with Portland. Guys who are getting interviews with some other teams in the league right now. So they're guys out there. It's just a matter of if the Thunder believes that it's the guy they want. They're not gonna fire their coach unless they think there's a guy out there that they are on. So yeah, I'm being very speculative right now. But anyway, my dog's freaking out.
Hi, Bobby. What's up, girl?
Thanks for joining us on the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn, Maddie Lee over there. Thanks to Charleston's for sponsoring the podcast. Thanks for you for listening, downloading, subscribing on Apple Podcasts. Make sure to do that. Even during the summer, we'll still be on. And we will see you after Sam Presti's exit interview. I can't tell you when because I don't have an exact date.
But early next week.
It'll probably be like Monday or Tuesday. But thanks again and see you soon.